government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio. I am your host, Don Nikoloff. So nice to have you here with us tonight, and I'll be here with you for the next 2 hours on this October the 31st, Halloween, or if you are on the East Coast and the Central Time Zone now, it is the 1st of November 2008. Lots going on, and rather than really get into too much news, I want to open up tonight's topic before bringing our guest on board. Our guest is a fabulous scientist and inventor, author, and lecturer, and he has been on this show virtually every week that I've been broadcasting solo with the Evident Footprints show, and he's just a wealth of information and a very spiritual individual, and so we can tackle a variety of topics. And really all these things that we talk about on this show are really all tied together in one fashion or another. It doesn't matter if it's politics or education, religion, science, and the metaphysical, spiritual issues, which really transcend the metaphysical and religious issues. He's got answers, and he's got a lot of insight. Now, since we're going to be talking a little bit about Halloween, or what's called All Hallow Eve, or All Hallows Eve, we may touch upon the spiritual a little bit and touch upon the scientific, not to create fear, but to show some light on a very dark topic. And I'm going to preface the introduction with a short news item. And I want you to consider something, because we're going to be discussing this, I think, in some detail. And we want to encourage the listeners at the bottom of this hour to call in and share your views about this topic. Now, we've heard quite a bit from the mainstream media as to how one particular candidate represents the mainstream conservative political view, and that's John McCain. John McCain was in the Navy, and they made him a war hero, even though the truth being told would show quite another story. Crashed five airplanes on the USS Forrestal, caused the deaths of some 168, I believe the number was, crew members, and injured another 134. And the incident that he was involved in was not the result of an electrical fire, but because he had wet-started a jet, causing the plane behind him to begin launching missiles and ejecting bombs. And that event was so outrageous that they determined that if they didn't transfer him to the USS Oriskany that night, that he probably would have been killed by the other sailors on the ship. But they turned that into a war story that became one of heroism. And nothing could be further from the truth. His years as a POW, and I don't wish anyone who's a POW any ill will, but there comes a time when you conduct 38 Radio Hanoi broadcasts for the communist regime there in Vietnam, you are betraying your country. You're committing treason. And he did commit treason, and so did a number of other of the POWs. It's explained away as breaking under pressure, although the story about McCain is quite a bit different. And I wrote about that in the article, The Three Stooges Go to Washington. I'm still hearing mainstream media calling him a hero, and I've gone down that trail that we call the rabbit hole, and I've moved the turds aside and got to the facts. And having gotten to the facts, I've seen that what the media is telling is a lie, and the media is conspiring to propagate this lie, to promote it, and this lie is a fraud on the American people. His birth in Panama is a fraud, as is the birth of Barack Obama in Hawaii. Now, the first issue that I'm going to discuss with tonight's guest has to do with the fact that now the governor of Hawaii, as well as the secretary of the state health department, have conspired to seal the birth records of Barack Obama. And we're going to talk about the logic of that issue with tonight's guest, and I welcome him again, yet again, on his weekly forays into the land of the unknown, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's good to be here as usual. Happy Halloween, by the way.
Oh, same to you. Yeah, you got to hear my introduction, I hope.
And every word.
Okay. This issue of the birth certificate, something dawned on me, and I guess it's because we are so propagandized that we don't really pay attention to every word we're hearing. And it's very simple to see the truth. And what I'd like you to talk about with me, let's get a conversation going about this. Obama still has not produced the birth certificate. There's a lawsuit filed in Philadelphia by attorney Philip Berg, which is now going to the Supreme Court. Mind you, what state is this country in when we have to go to the Supreme Court because someone wanting to hold the highest office in the land won't show the people in this country where he was born? What state are we in now? We have this issue of the sealed records in Hawaii. They're not going to allow us to see the records? What records is my question. What records are sealed? Because if they had any records of Obama's birth, wouldn't he have already produced them? And I mean legitimate records. So the question is, what is sealed? Any comments about that?
Wow, I mean, you're really laying it on me there, partner. Well, it's a good question. I mean, it's pretty difficult to imagine just what is sealed. However, if one was to dig into your investigation concerning the subject of Obama's origins and his supposed family tree, it would seem to me that there could be a whole mess of facts that would be sealed for the purpose of not letting anybody find them, not for the purpose of guarding treasured information. That would be my only comment.
I'm sort of asking a rhetorical question here because Obama cannot produce records from Hawaii because there are none. That's the point I'm making, is that this is being used as an excuse or a ruse not to address the issue. Look, we've sealed the records.
No, I understood what you were getting at, but my comment was that what could be sealed are all the true facts about the background of this guy that they don't want out.
You actually think they have those facts there? You know, we can't seem to get them from anywhere. We can't get them from the Democratic National Committee. We can't get them from the Federal Elections Committee. The whole media is stymied, or whoever has the records is hiding them. This is just preposterous to me that this is going on. And the reason I'm asking this question is not to beat a dead horse. This is to awaken the American people and say, look, people, what if he can't produce records, birth records, which should be a very simple thing. Any one of us can do this. Any legitimate American citizen can go down to the health department where they were in the town that, where they were born, if they know where they were born, or at least in the state, and obtain some legitimate copy of your records. What is the force at work here that allows us to go on, that everyone is so apathetic and not even thinking? I have not heard one person ask this question. What are in the records that they, and I know you can't answer that, because the only conclusion I or you can come to is that this is just another ruse. And it should be considered fraud on the American people and treason. I don't know.
Well, I can easily see why it's sticking in your craw. The fact of the matter is that it is fraud if the guy can't produce a birth certificate. But to be honest with you, we've had so many fraudulent situations rammed up our nose, I'm not so surprised about that. What I am surprised about is the apathy. I mean, I can't believe that every single person in our country is just going to sit back and say, oh, well, if he doesn't have a birth certificate, you know, that's the way it goes. I mean, I think it's about time people started waking up and realize that there's some incredible chicanery afoot. I mean, after all, it's our necks in the long run, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, on our show, go ahead.
That's okay. I was just going to say, it's not just a matter of, common principle, even though it should be. If you have the intelligence to make a little bit of projection, you know, where does it look like it's headed if you dare to think along those lines? It's not good.
It is though they are telling us, look, you have no right to know anything. You have no right to know the truth. You have no right to know what lies are being told to you. You have no rights whatsoever. Any of us. And I'm terribly offended by that in one sense, and yet I can look at it from another view and say, you know, this is really interesting. The desperation on the part of these people has become so absurd. We must really be getting at their craw. We must really have made them become fearful of our ability to think this through and discern what's really going on. Now, it's a few of us, but I used a reference a couple of nights ago. I had a caller who brought up the issue of the man that went into the courts and challenged the issue of prayer in the schools, and he got the ACLU involved in the case, and they got God taken out of school. They had it made illegal to pray in school. One person did that. One person got God taken out of the educational system on the grounds of separation of church and state. And I, as far as I understand and recall the details, it was a few years ago that this happened. This individual was an atheist. So what they did is they put his religious belief in the school and took ours out. Which, again, is another, it's the same scenario here. It's one person standing up against the law with impunity. It's one person standing up against the Constitution saying, screw the Constitution. Now, we've got a president that said that already, making the comment that it's just a GD piece of paper. And it's beyond me that people in Washington even? I mean, these highbrow politicians that are making $200,000 a year plus $2 million in perks a year, under-the-table perks that nobody knows about or that few know about. And you see, it's this evil spirit that drives it, you know. The fear that they have of a handful of families that have held on to all the wealth of the planet, and then their controllers, which we've talked about. And that brings us really, you know, this is probably a point where we can segue, at least for a while, into the topic, which is appropriate because of the day of the year it is. And this is the day when people put on masks and they pretend to be somebody other than who they are. That's exactly what we live with every day of the year. This is just our turn to do it. I find that rather ironic. One day in the year, we do it. And it's a special day that honors them. And then the rest of the year, they do it to us. And that's Halloween. And I know you wanted to talk about some of your favorite characters that are always associated with Halloween. And so I turn the mic over to you, Mr. Murray.
Well, what I was going to do kind of may not work anymore simply because of the way that we wound up getting into the subject, but I thought it would be interesting to look at some of the traditional goblins and monster-type characters that are associated with the practice of Halloween. And look at the backgrounds associated with some of these stories. And then contrast that with exactly the kind of thing that you're talking about here, and that is the backgrounds of some real people and how the whole thing is basically whitewashed over or accepted. It just, without question, it makes for a real mystery in human behavior. You want me to still pursue that? I mean, do you think that
absolutely. You know, I hope I didn't screw it up for you there. It's just that, you know, this has been on my mind, and I've gotten a lot of email. People want me to address this whole issue. What's my opinion about, you know, that matter that we just discussed.
I understand. Well, let's see. There's two stories that you know, fit the bill very nicely as far as this goes. One, of course, is the novel written by Mary Shelley called Frankenstein. And I remember as a kid watching the traditional Frankenstein movie at a very early age and being incredibly impressed by the fact that there was a scientist who was audacious enough to try and bring dismembered corpses back to life in some way, shape, or form. And, of course, it resulted in some horrific evil being released on the world. I never forgot the story. I mean, the whole thing really has an incredible impact, especially if you're a young kid with a scientific bent. It's a very unusual tale, considering also the fact that, you know, high voltage electricity and all sorts of scientific equipment was used in the effort to reanimate these dead bodies. The second story that I thought was really incredible is Bram Stoker's tale, Dracula. I watched that movie in all of its various forms, you know, throughout the years as I was growing up. And the entire notion of this undead character roaming around, gaining sustenance for his continued existence by sucking the blood life out of other people, just has a way of really making an impression on you if you stop and think about what it is that's being suggested.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, you know, when I was young, the point of interest was the story of the monsters themselves. But then as I got older, I started thinking, well, gee, you know, these are two stories that were written by people who had, you know, an obvious curiosity about this subject matter. You know, I wonder if it's possible that they're based on anything of substance. And so I took it upon myself at various points in time, you know, to do a little research into the background, not only of the writers, but of the topics being written about. And what I discovered is it was really pretty amazing. In the case of Frankenstein, first of all, there is a castle, Frankenstein. Whether it has anything to do itself with the actual tale of the story told using that name, I've never been able to dig deep enough to find out. But what's interesting is that there was an alchemist. I can't think of his name right now, which is unfortunate, but the guy's particular area of investigation was a facet of alchemy known as forbidden alchemy. Now, there's actually three tiers of, or three levels of alchemy that can be investigated, and there's one level of this science that is directed to each of the main kingdoms, if you will. There's the vegetable kingdom, and the alchemy that's a study of that is called spagyrics. And then there's the mineral kingdom, and that's the one that metallic alchemy is associated with, and most people really think about changing lead into gold when you talk about alchemy. That's the area where they mostly believe that science is directed. And then there's the animal kingdom. And it's the applications of the principles of alchemy to the animal kingdom that was referred to as forbidden alchemy. And there's a whole mess of interesting things that come out of that. But in keeping with what I'm trying to establish here, this guy's particular interest as an alchemist was what constitutes the essence of life, and why, you know, and how and why does it manifest as a motive force or a life force within the material we have defined as human tissue. And of course, you know, that's an incredible line of investigation in its own right. But I was stunned to find out that not only was there somebody who was looking into that and apparently doing experiments with cadavers and whatnot, but that the film, which Hollywood had produced as a fantasy, had a second veneer or a second layer underneath it. Not only had it been a book, but before that, it had been a story of at least parallel interest, and it was based on something real. So the next thing I started to look at was the story of Dracula. You know, what is the story with that? And it turns out that when you dig deeper, this guy Bram Stoker had exposed some legends in the area of not so much Transylvania, but it was actually Moldavia. And there was a family of princes or rulers in the Principality of Moldavia that had defended that portion of Europe very viciously against the invasions of the Turks. And the family in question was called Tepes. And the guy's first name was Vlad, or Vladimir, Vladimir Tepes, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, was the name of this individual who literally hated the Turks beyond all description and stemmed their invasion into that part of Europe in a very vehement way. But it wasn't just a military effort, but it was also, you know, accompanied by a great deal of torture of the Turks and some pretty horrific things that were done. This individual earned himself the local title of Drahur, which translates loosely either to devil or dragon, depending on how you want to look at it. And his son, who had the same name as the father, was even more of an anti-Turk fanatic, and shed even more blood to the point where he used to just have these incredible blood orgies using Turkish victims, and he became known as Dracula, which means son of the dragon or son of the devil. So it's very interesting that, you know, that even though he may not have literally drunk the blood of these people, although perhaps he did also, who knows, but the mere fact that there was a real individual behind this horror story, which was actually a part of history and then became a novel about a vampire and then became a film to entertain the masses, is really pretty interesting, because it means that if you want to look deep enough into anything, you're going to find truth that's different from what's being portrayed. And that's the reason why I wanted to open the show with that little subject, not only to honor Halloween and my particular interest in monsters, but also because here is a situation that's really a parallel to what we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have these characters, Frankenstein and Dracula, that everybody talks about at least once a year. And it turns out that when you dig into what they really are, you find that there's a truth there, which is very different from what you're led to perceive when you watch the movie. As a matter of fact, it's more horrible in some ways than the watered-down stories that were made into movies. So now we have two candidates that are running for the highest office in the land, and it's just amazing to me that it's like watching a movie. You know, everybody is all hepped up about pulling the lever. We got a war hero on the other hand. We got a Christ-like image on the other hand that's going to be a liberator of all of humanity. And where is the concern about who are these people for real? You know, what happened to our process of due diligence? I mean, in times that are as bad as they are, you'd think that people would be more interested in finding out who's going to run the helm for the next 4 years. Are we going to have another version of Clinton or another version of the yo-yo that's in there now? Or are we truly going to have someone of worthwhile character? I mean, to me, it's a pivotal issue. And it's just a shame that everybody swept into the fervor of this entire event as if it's some kind of a Halloween celebration or a national holiday. But they're more taken up with the excitement of the campaigning and the political rhetoric than they are in investigating the true nature of the people that are running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there hasn't been one real issue addressed at all by either of the candidates. There has been no real issue addressed during any of the debates. It was just another propaganda exercise. The very first debate, the way they excluded Congressman Ron Paul, you realize he ran up until very recently and was garnering a majority of votes in all the states he was running. Not every single state, but they were scared to death about the response that Ron Paul had gotten. And yet you heard him the least amount during the debates. They were very unfair. They were not equal and balanced like they like to proclaim in giving all of them equal time. And they allowed these absurdities to take place, like Rudy Giuliani dressing him down or attacking what he said. And he spoke the truth. That's the funny thing about it, is he spoke the truth, and you have this guy that likes to go around in drag and is now earning $800 an hour in this real estate scam they call the bailout. And the media plays this up like crazy. Now the media is trying to play up like, oh, now they're starting to see these problems with Obama. You won't see this on CNN because the CNN stands for the number 13. That's the Illuminati families that control that network. But they also control Fox, which is the 666 channel. And then all the other networks make up a 6. And so the three major networks are 666 again. This symbology, this black magic, this satanic worship and ritual is worked into everything they do. And I've brought it up before, and it's worth bringing it up again, especially on Halloween, that they have their little rituals going on. They have Obama giving a speech in Indiana at night, rather late at night. I mean, it's insane what's going on. And the people are already hooting and hollering, and he's not even there. You know, they have these booms or towers where they're shooting from way up above the crowd, so you get this image in your subconscious that there's massive amounts of people supporting this guy. And these people really mean nothing that they're there because they don't know the issues. They don't know what's going on. They don't know that they've not heard any issues. And all that they've heard are a bunch of lies. They refuse to listen to it. I heard a talk show host tonight on another show. Actually, it was earlier this afternoon. I guess I've just been thinking about it all day. He said, the man says that he's a Christian, so I have to go along with that, even though there's all these people that are claiming he's Muslim. Well, he's had some Freudian slips on TV, I think it's Meet the Press, you know, one of those morning shows on Sunday. It escapes me right now. But the journalist actually corrected him and said, you mean Christian. And he was like in a trance or something, and he snapped out of it, and he goes, well, what I meant to say is him referring to, you know, and he didn't even complete the answer. He let the journalist answer the question for him, but he slipped up. He said, McCain hasn't pressed or asked me about my Muslim religion. And said it not even realizing what he had said. I gave out a web address last night, a link to a video. And when I went to watch it again this morning, it was gone. It was already taken off of the website. But it was an expose on all of these radical Muslim ties that Obama has. And there was an interesting fact stated in the movie. And it goes along hand in hand. It parallels my research when I said Obama is from Indonesia. Just because they're parroting the story in Africa does not make it true. And that's why I used this example at the outset of the evening to point out that his records are sealed But he has no records to produce, so what did they seal? You understand the gist of that.
I do.
Well, yeah. Well, there's the film clearly says that he's registered in Indonesia as Barry Satoru, and that when he was 19, he changed his name to Barack Obama in Kenya. Now, it's interesting because that parallels my research. I knew there was something up with Kenya all along. In fact, I had even considered that he may have been born there. Now, Philip Berg, who filed the lawsuit, says he has a recording of Madeline Dunham saying that she attended Barack Obama's birth in Africa, as if the ace in the hole is her daughter, Stanley Ann Dunham. It was an American, and that would still make him qualify to be an American, because the records are in Hawaii. Well, it's just as easy for her to lie, too, you see, just to put that premise out as if that somehow substantiates it, still with no birth certificate, mind you, or what we call certificate of live birth, which has all the official seals and signatures and the particular information, like what his length was and what his weight was. I've not seen any of that criteria from any of these people. And it's no different. I'm not just singling out Obama, because McCain has the same issue. We've been through the issue of the hospital that wasn't built. Even 5 years after his birth, there was no naval base hospital there. That's just how it is. Their interest was controlling the drug trade and the arms trade through that canal. It wasn't about having a hospital there, and so they could bring John McCain into the world. And all the other research I did disputes that as well. His parents were not Americans either. Now I'm finding out some information, really, really revealing information, that Stanley Dunham was referred to as a man from Chicago and from Lebanon. Now, I'm making that charge. The piece is being written as we speak, so I'm not going to say much more than that, but I can allude to that fact. And then I know that Stanley Ann Dunham went to school, kindergarten and first grade, in Oklahoma City. And I even know the name of the school, not in Kansas. And I stated last night on the show that Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz still lays claim to Kansas. And the Obamas are going to have to shift their place over to Oklahoma, at least on the basis of these two years of school that I know Stanley Ann Dunham went to a kindergarten and first grade class at a particular school. I know the name of the town, I know the address of the school, and I know the name of the teacher that ran the school. And it corroborates all the information about Tinker Air Force Base and the CIA, and even some more information. Got some more names to add to the pool. So this is coming together quite nicely, and still the mainstream media is, you're doing this 20 years at the same church mantra, although we're not up to 2012 yet, when that will be 20 years. And he went to Africa after he graduated from school. He went after his brother died in 1987. Now we have proof that he was there as early as 1980. As early as 1980, or 7 years prior. Now they've analyzed his book with William Ayers, and they're saying that the syntax of the book he wrote, speaking of Obama, Dreams from My Father, is in the writing style of William Ayers, including his use of punctuation, his use of particular words to describe a particular scene or a particular person. There are hundreds of cases where he appears well over 50% to be the person that wrote the book, and not Obama. It matches one of the books Ayers wrote. Now, one could say, well, Obama just copied the style of that book. It's beyond that. It's well beyond that. So we have a multiplicity of facts that just are not lining up with this guy. And still, those of us that are talking about it, or now this makes us conspiracy theorists, because we found the truth and we reported the truth and we're talking about the truth, we're conspiracy theorists. Well, just give me a simple explanation. Why didn't the guy present his birth certificate to anyone? Why is he not obligated to do that? Why is no one enforcing the law requiring him to do that? Is it because maybe the man that, or the family that the Dracula story was written about, possibly the Rothschilds, is it because of the power they wield over our government? Or is it their controllers? Is it that much fear that these people have to hide behind these masks?
Well, I think that there certainly is an amount of fear involved in this. I mean, it's really kind of interesting how the whole thing seems to work. Well, when you were discussing earlier about the facade involved in this entire campaign regarding both of the candidates and our, well, let's put it this way, our lack of ability to do a true selection here. I mean, we're basically getting these two choices rammed down our throat. And we're not supposed to even investigate their qualifications. We're just supposed to accept all that blindly. I don't know why they don't just eliminate the whole situation and say, hey, listen, here's the guy we're putting in. You know, why do they have to have all the pomp and ceremony? And I think that the answer to that is because of the fear factor. As long as people have the belief that they are electing someone, it gives them the illusion that they are in control. It doesn't matter that it's a rigged deal. It's like a multiple choice question. You know, you only got two answers, and you're not allowed to do an essay. You have to pick one of the two answers. You know, so the whole thing is rigged in that respect.
Well, there are other candidates running, too. Cynthia McKinney, Chuck Baldwin, and Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader runs everyone.
Right, and so that part is almost looked upon as a national joke in that respect. But Ron Paul is a very serious candidate who could do wonders for this country if he was allowed to run and given the proper exposure. But there again, most people don't even know who he is. I've asked around about that and said, who the heck is that guy? You know, so there again, why isn't it all out in the open? The answer is probably is fear. Because it seems to me that everything that these people do is always from the shadows. None of them have the nerve to just come right out in the open and operate in the sunlight. I think you hit the nail on the head 2 weeks ago when you said, well, what do cockroaches do when someone turns the light on? You know, they scatter. And the answer has to be something akin to fear. Fear of exposure, you know, fear of truth, fear that the jig will be up. Something of that sort. But the thing that concerns me is that's normal for the behavior of a cockroach. What concerns me is the fact that the American public seems to be very reticent to do what they should do in these cases. Here we have one guy that you mentioned his name who has the audacity to stand up to the system and at least file a lawsuit. What if 100,000 people filed a lawsuit? contested in some way, shape, or form. If one guy can throw a monkey wrench into the system in a legitimate manner, just imagine what 50,000 or 100,000 people that really are interested in their own future and their own rights could do. I mean, we've still got the power to do these things. We should use it. Because in the very near future, you won't have the power to do that anymore.
Well, let me ask you a question. Where was our Christian president of the United States on the day that that happened? You know, I'm in a sense, I'm almost being facetious about that story that I told, because we know damn well that it wasn't the one guy that did it. It was the government that said this. Look, you're going to go in there and you're going to file this and you're going to win, because this is going to be done. We're taking God out of the school.
That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, and it was uncontested. No one in the country contested it, let alone anyone in our Congress or Senate. And certainly the president who's writing signing statements and signing them like they're going out of style is capable of writing one, reversing that decision. He's done it with every other constitutional right we have. But see, we're not hearing the truth from any of these people. So again, we're listening to these stories and we're saying, how can this be happening? How can one man do this? Oh my God, they did it. Oh, well, okay. Well, it's back to the boob tube, you know. Let me get a six pack of beer, another bag of chips, sit down and stuff my face and do it all over again tomorrow. Our consciousness is crying out, wake up. What little bit we have, or our higher self is probably in total despair at the depravity of the human condition on this planet. And I can't help but think that higher powers, God himself, has got to be really disgusted with this species called the human being on this planet. And I'm not speaking about the good people out there. We know who they are and they know who they are. But in general, the folks that buy into all this stuff, they're talking about, now they're criticizing Obama about this issue of promoting freedom of choice so that abortions can take place even up into the ninth month. And it's pretty horrific what they do to facilitate an abortion, to create an abortion.
It's absolutely gross. I looked into that. I know a good deal about that. And it's very nice that they anesthetize the person and they disguise the entire situation as a DNC. But in reality, it's not just scraping the inner membrane of the womb. That's a cleanup after the fact. I think we should actually go in and discuss what they do, Don. I don't think we should pull any punches. Because this is the kind of horror that is going on all over the world, not just in the case of abortions, but in the case of war, in the case of outright murders, in the case of other atrocities, and it's always whitewashed. You know, maybe we should just go in and describe what they do. What is a real abortion? Yeah. Especially not in the first trimester. We're talking about, the later abortions. The ones where person makes up their mind after the fact, by several months. It's no longer just a scraping. It's a pretty gruesome thing. I mean, if nobody else has told you how it's done, I'll be happy to tell you, because it's depravity.
There's a film on YouTube that I've actually seen. And not that I went looking for it. This was sent to me. and with a warning. This is very graphic, and it'll break your heart, and it'll anger you to think that this is going on. But if there's going to be a judgment from God, this certainly will cause you to understand. But go ahead, Jim, and describe the process.
Well, to begin with, the skull is crushed and penetrated to facilitate the removal of the body, and then it's literally pulled apart and pulled out of the uterus with forceps and other instruments, piece by piece. I mean, if you saw that film, you know that they'll remove an arm, a leg, portion of the spine. You know, it doesn't come out in one neat little bundle. And the child was alive prior to the beginning of this procedure. You know, so it's all very well and good that that the person who's carrying the child and decides they don't want it, they go to sleep, probably have some pleasant dreams, and when they wake up, they're no longer pregnant. But I think that they should be shown what's removed and how it was removed. They should bear part of the guilt. You know, they should be shown what's in that porcelain tray alongside the operating table when they wake up. And that was little Johnny or little Sally up until a few minutes ago. And what's worse than that, if you stop and think about it, talking about the Halloween, Dr. Frankenstein's behavior was mild compared to the doctors that are willing to do this. And what are they doing it for? They get paid. You know, it gives them another car payment on that Mercedes or that $600,000 home. You know, that's what it's all about. And what happened to the morals? What happened to the Hippocratic oath that they all took, you know, to preserve life at any cost? You know, once we start to throw away our fundamental appreciation for decency and the feeling of right and wrong, then what the heck is left? Where are we headed as not only as a nation, but as a race?
Mm-hmm. We're given limited amounts of information, wouldn't you agree? And then we're told what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah, of course. But the worst part about it is that, you know, we've got the option to say, hey, wait a minute. I don't want this rammed up my nose. I want to make my own selection. I want more information. So what's to prevent us, especially in the information age, from getting the information ourselves? I think it's just because people don't want to be bothered. They're playing the ostrich game. They're sticking their head in the sand and saying, well, when this ugliness passes, I'll come up for a breath of fresh air. Well, guess what? The ugliness isn't passing anymore. It's here to stay. And we're the ones who allowed it. You know, I just hope that when the day comes that all of this descends with fury upon us, that we don't hear a lot of wailing and crying and gnashing of teeth, because we should just humbly accept the fate we've allowed and deal with it. But I know damn well that's not what's going to happen, Don. All these spineless you-know-whats that are out there now creating this mess are going to be the first ones to complain when the true horror of this descends upon us. You know,
yes.
The same exact thing happened in Nazi Germany. You know, the people said, oh, it's the best thing, you know, the government is doing what's right, this and that, you know, and they turned their heads from ugly scenes like Dachau and other concentration camps, and they believed it wasn't happening, you know, and then finally, look what it led to. It led to a war that was another horror story in itself. Well, this time, it's going to be very different because the United States is standing alone. The rest of the world has already dismissed us as a superpower. They look upon us now as a pathetic nation who is not aware of its own plight It's being governed by tyrannical individuals that are looking to create a massive police state, a fascist state, and also we're looked upon as essentially the center of the financial woes and blues of the rest of the world, because the world standardized on the dollar, which is now a joke and has no meaning. The Russians and the Chinese are the only people that have any true wealth. And if they ever decide to get together and create a new currency, which is actually being talked about right now, the dollar will become absolutely useless. And the United States will just be reduced to a huge, self-contained island, devoid of interaction with the rest of the globe, and left to unravel its own misery. And believe me, there will be plenty of misery.
Yes. Well, Jim, we've got to take a break right now. We're at the top, or I should say the end of our first hour, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes and continue this discussion with our science editor, Mr. Jim Murray. You're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Storable food. Storable food. HempUSA.org has an inexpensive, nutritionally dense, high-frequency food. Hemp, known around the world, will boost your immune system and increase energy levels. Detoxifies the body and reduces junk food cravings. Burns fat and builds muscle. And is easy to digest, non-allergenic, and gluten-free. Can be made into smoothies, breads, muffins, pancakes, cookies, you name it. The entire planet should make this a staple food in their diet. The seeds will scrape the colon wall. The powder will feed the body vital minerals. And the oil will clean the arterial walls and feed the brain. Try our powder, seeds, and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org. That's 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. Remember, vacuum packaging this food will have at least a 5-year shelf life stored in a cool, dark, dry place. Holidays are coming, and this would make a perfect gift for friends and family. Call today, 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. And remember, let your food be your medicine, and your medicine be your food.
Welcome back to our second hour of Evident Footprints on BBS Radio. We're having a Halloween discussion, and we're talking about different types of masquerades. One is a presidential election, and the other is what's taking place on Halloween. Welcome back to the show, Jim.
Thank you, Don. Good to be here again.
You know, today is also, being the 31st of October, it's also an anniversary. And in my Three Stooges Go to Washington article, part four, I mention what appears and numerologically, as well as the fact that this seems to be buried under the carpet, something that I found quite by accident, although had I not been researching, I wouldn't have found it at all. So is it really an accident? I found the name of a baby, Renee Abena Obama, and then alternate spellings, Renee L. Abena Obama. And I thought, well, who is this? Doesn't appear to belong to a family. This baby was born on Halloween and lived a total of 56 days, dying on December 25th, 2004. And then we had the tsunami hit the next day in Indonesia. Very symbolic, you see, metaphysically. If you're into alchemy or satanic rituals, it has all the earmarkings of a satanic ritual. The baby had a social security number. The baby's name and social security number shows up on three search engines, worldvitalreports.com, the Social Security Death Index, and FamilySearch.org, which belongs to the Mormon Church. And there should be a murder investigation, I would presume, or it should really raise a suspicion who had a baby named Obama. Now, we know Barack Obama has two living daughters, but I find this interesting that this baby was not born in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or Hawaii, or Seattle, Washington, or Bangor, Maine. It was born in the state of Maryland. And who would have been in Maryland in 2004? None other than the senator that's running for the presidency, right?
Well, that's what you would expect, but it's a pretty interesting situation. I actually was aware of that baby through, you know, private conversations with you, and I was interested in looking into that more deeply, but to be honest with you, I didn't have the wherewithal to dig into it, because unfortunately the computer that I have that can get on the internet is barred from a lot of investigations because of the way the firewall is set up. But I wish you'd talk a little bit more about that, because it's a really startling thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, really, that in itself, never mind the birth certificate, you know, that in itself should be explained by somebody. You know, here you have a child that's only lived 56 days and has got the same name as a major candidate running for president, and nobody questions it, nobody's heard about it. You know, what is the significance of it? Who had the baby? You know, these are things that, again, I'm surprised that nobody is digging into that.
Yes, and I talked to several funeral directors, and one said, well, sometimes the deaths are reported by the funeral home. This had the code 72 in the Social Security Death Index. And so I had to look up what the codes meant, and it meant that it was reported by a funeral home. So this baby didn't go to a hospital, most likely. He said, If the baby was sick and had died in the hospital, there would have been a report written out by a doctor, and the coroner would have filled that report. But in this case, it's reported by the funeral home. I found that to be highly unusual, but par for the course with many of the other things that I found. Now, let's talk about some numbers here, because the numbers you could say, well, these are just coincidences, or I'm just analyzing this. You know, the doubting Thomas out there might say that. The baby was born Halloween or October 31st, which is really All Hallows Eve. It's a symbolically a very dark night. It's when all the dead spirits come out and haunt people. And there are hundreds and hundreds of stories through the ages that are attached to that date. So let it suffice to say that that's a significant date. And it's as though the baby was planned to be born at that time. You understand. They know what the gestation period of a human being is, so you can pretty well target it. You can even force the birth to occur in the case of a date. Now, if the baby was trying to come out on the 30th, they can, through certain drugs, I think one is called Pitocin, which slows down the birthing process, and they can actually affect the actual baby's entrance into the three-dimensional world at a particular time. And it's not even of consequence what the intelligence of the baby is. It's a blood act. It's a sacrifice that's planned. Now, I don't normally just calculate dates in the top of my head, so I sat down and actually figured out that from the 31st of October to December 25th, which is the date the baby died, was 56 days. And immediately I saw the number 56 as being a symbolic numerological representation of the number 11. 5 plus correct. 6 is 11. Okay? What was the next thing to find was the significance of why Christmas was chosen. Well, it's quite obvious to anyone even thinking, or let's say the pagan Christmas. Why was that day chosen? And when I went back into the research that I had done on both sides of Obama's family, so-called family, the Obamas and the Dunhams, of course, you have no valid birth dates for any of the Obama people. You're lucky if you can get a last name for them, and primarily they use only one name, so it's unusual for them to have three names. That's very unusual. So I looked at the Dunham side of the family, and I noticed that the great-grandfather, or Madeline Dunham, and I'm using these names with great hesitation because I determined that they're just fictitious names, like the Bush name or the McCain name. They're fictions. So I have indication, especially related to Africa, that the Obama name is not real. So the Dunham name, Rolla, or I should say the Dunham side of the family, the great-grandfather of Barack Obama was born on December 25th, 1894. This is a published date, 1894, December 25th. From 1894 to 2004, same date, is exactly 110 years. Numerologically, 110 represents what number, Jim?
11.
11. So we have our second 11. Now, the next day, and the significance here is you have a sequence of events, so it's likely something's going to happen the next day or 56 days after that. So happened the next day, the tsunami hit, the big one that killed. The published date is 146,000 people. Let's do the numerology on that. Now, it may be an odd number, but they published the date, 146,000. There's a specific reason. 1 plus 4 is 5, plus 6 is 11. We have another 11. very recently, now this is after the article was published, I went back and looked at some research I had dug up, and I would have included this in the article, but that we had to cut down the size of it. And I had a number of real estate transactions that I had discovered and disclosed related to Obama using an alias. The whole family has aliases, and they're used in the laundering of money. I can say that with a certainty. And this particular property was in Florida, and it was in the name of Renee L. Abena, last name Bama, leaving the O off of the name. This matches other aliases that Barack Obama has. Renee L. Abena Bama with, in parentheses, life estate. And then a second name, Linda B. Hartook. And then a third name, Brian Bama. Well, Brian is computer code for Barack. Just the letter B in there, or the BR, is enough to let them know that's Barack, you see? But they use the name Brian to hide, to obfuscate it. And there's a house, I actually didn't look up what the piece of property is, but it has a number associated. Maybe it's a condominium, or maybe it's a house in an allotment, like a gated community or something like that. I don't know. I haven't looked at that, but it's interesting. The number is 111. Highly, highly coincidental, yet very ritualistic. Any thoughts on that?
No, I was just, while you were explaining that, I was just running the numbers in my head. And what I remember of numerology, 11 is considered a sacred or noble number. So is 22 and 33.
Mm-hmm.
And those numbers are not to be added together, you know, in a solution as other numbers usually are. So mm-hmm. In other words, if you get an 11, you immediately stop there. You're not supposed to add the two ones together to reduce the 11 to a 2.
That's right.
And in the case of 111, I was wondering how that law applies, because if you look at it from the standpoint of 111 not being a special number, then it sums to a 3. But on the other hand, it could well be that it was chosen simply because 111 has significance with respect to the 11. And the 100 is just a consequence of perhaps the way the neighborhood is laid out. But it's certainly an interesting coincidence that you have all these 11s.
Yeah, or you could look at the first two 1s and see an 11, and look at the second 1 and the third 1 and see another 11.
That's correct.
It's all about perception and what they determined it meant when they did it. But I found it highly coincidental. And it appears that property was a payoff for having committed the sacrifice, having assisted and participated in it. Now, for a lot of people, that's a stretch, but this goes on all the time. There are annually $2.2 million children abducted worldwide and sold into slavery and other very abhorrent situations. And the rest of the world turns a dead ear and a blind eye to all of it. I should say a deaf ear. I didn't mean a dead ear. What's the difference? So this is just another, notch another ticker or another number. That's all it is. Yet to them, it's highly significant. And this is the behind the scenes activities of someone claiming to be a Christian, although there's quite a bit of evidence proving otherwise, you know, and in fact debunking all of that. And the information that I have uncovered in my examination of what has been published tells a completely different story. And I have to go by the facts that I've seen and the conclusions that one can draw from those facts, not from the stories. The stories cannot be supported by fact. So, you know, we have in our making, in a way, we have our own Frankenstein or Dracula kind of story being told here. This is like Rosemary's Baby. You know, Rosemary's Baby was a story. Mia Farrow was a spouse of a member of a satanic group, and they knew that this baby was the father of the baby was Satan, and she carried this baby, and once she found out that it was Satan's baby, before she gave birth to it, she didn't want anything to do with it. But in the end, she succumbed to that motherly instinct. And we take these movies very lightly, don't we, Jim? They don't seem real in the end. You know, you're reminded this is just a movie, when all along they're showing us exactly what they do. That we take that story into our being, into our subconscious or our conscious mind, if it manifests itself in all sorts of ways, always in fear, or a dumbed down numbness, and insensitivity. Now, I thought I'd seen everything in the movies and in TV shows. Tonight, I spent my usual 5 minutes just looking for a signpost as to what they're pushing right now. All the media is on the same page about this campaign, and they're all parroting the same thing. Most people will stay on one channel and they'll sit and listen to what they're saying for an hour or two, if that long, and then they move to something else. But if you go from channel to channel, you find it kind of unusual that they're all talking about the same thing, even though they're calling it something different. They're calling the shows something different, different moderators, different guests. They're all saying the same thing. And that's what propaganda is about. I hit one channel, and I thought I had seen the depravity of American television, but I have to tell you now that... let me ask you the rhetorical question, because maybe I'm missing something. Is bestiality illegal in the United States?
I believe it's illegal, but actually it shouldn't have to be illegal, because it's immoral and depraved enough that a healthy, normal person wouldn't have an interest in it, or shouldn't have an interest.
Yeah, but they have laws against it, so I presume that they create those laws because, number one, they don't want anyone to do it, or only a select few. Number two.
that's a pretty interesting way of looking at it. I see what you're getting at. Well, what you really piqued my curiosity, what exactly did you see?
Well, it was a show on Spike TV called Mansers. The word answers with the letter M in front. Mansers. And it was the beginning of the show, and I thought, is this a news show or what is this? And they started talking about bestiality. And they said, they're giving a definition of it, and then they're interviewing this psychologist that says, well, I've had 81 patients that have all had sex with animals. And then they're showing horses, and they show a pig, and they're talking to these guys, and one guy says, I prefer pigs, or I prefer sheep. And then they're talking about sailors on a ship. And I don't even remember the name of the animal, but it's a sea creature from somewhere near Australia that they say these sailors had sex with while they were out at sea. And I'm thinking to myself, this is against the law. People go to jail for this, or they get put in institutions and drugged for the rest of their lives so the pharmaceutical companies can make some money, too. And they're promoting this. They're actually talking about it, and they're talking about what it feels like, what the best replacement for a woman is. This is what they're describing. Where, what level of depravity can television or mainstream media fall to? I didn't know there were frequencies below zero cycles per second. You know? But
there are frequencies below zero. The problem is that it represents an inversion of the original wave.
Well, I understand that in reality, but I'm just saying the consciousness frequencies, I'm saying.
Well, no, I'm deliberately saying that because, you know, once you get to that level, everything else is inverted also. I mean, imagine being interested in that, you know. Most people would shudder. Now, I can just see, an audience of depraved individuals watching such a presentation with enthusiasm, perhaps eating popcorn and passing soft drinks around. You know.
Naturally, I couldn't watch much of this, but I was in disbelief that I was actually hearing this. And yet, you know, they have these commercials for people at night. And actually, they're showing them all during the day now. And using puns to describe the guy's success in his community because he's taking a Enzyte, for example. You know, and I'm just trying to get a handle on what level of depravity even the ad agencies have succumbed to now or descended. Because it's one thing to try to get your message to the widest audience, but what do they, why would you show someone having or talk about someone having sex with animals? I mean, we're doing that right now, but I'm reporting the fact that I saw this on mainstream television. That's the point I'm getting at here, is that the FCC doesn't have a problem with this, or the network itself, or the advertisers themselves, or anybody in the communities where this stuff is being shown, nobody has a problem with this? We have really sunk to a level of, I mean, that's being shown on one channel and the other one is the election. Which, you know, flip a coin. Which one has more substance to it?
That's a tough one.
It's just mind-boggling. And then, you know, they're saying, well, you know, and man didn't choose, you know, the apes are just one gene away from a human being. We didn't choose the apes to engage in this depravity with. People are doing it with dogs. They were interviewing guys. I prefer dogs, one guy said, or chickens. It's Well, I don't want to dwell on this too much more, or we're not only going to lose our audience, we're going to lose our host and our guest. So,
Well, you won't lose me as a guest, but I'll tell you what, it does, you know, you've opened up a real interesting can of worms because, you know, it's so deep, really. It's a lot deeper than it sounds. And we could do a whole show on that, except that it would be like walking on eggs. I mean, it's a difficult subject to broach, you know, without disgusting the audience. But
why don't we just walk on eggs one show then?
Well, I mean, I'm perfectly willing. You know me. I'll cover any topic. I'm not afraid of it. But it's just that what goes through my mind is the real meaning behind all this.
Of course,
you know, for
yeah.
instance, you know, it's like people don't realize, you know, because they probably haven't had any reason to go there. But, for instance, men who prefer murdering women, for instance, as opposed to having sex with them, are actually having ritualistic sex because the dagger that they're stabbing them with is representative of an erect penis. You know, there's always another tier of knowledge or information behind what you're viewing up front. And so, you know, what's going through my mind while you were describing this bestiality business, I was pondering on the things that I know that lead to this type of thing. And, you know, we could literally do a show on it, but what I was going to say is, it's an indication of the depth of the sickness that is pervading our country. And it has to do with the fact that there's such an incredible entanglement of social rules, religious prohibitions, and social customs and everything else that literally steer people away from the natural attractions that God has provided. I mean, I don't know about other people, but I wouldn't have too much trouble making a selection between a naked human woman and, you know, that horse down the street. But
pardon me. It just hit me. You're not referring to anybody specifically. You're just speaking.
No, I wasn't particularly interested in any horse, but I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, it's a very natural, it should be, let's put it that way, it should be a very natural thing, but the human psyche and the sexual circuitry in a human body can become so, I don't know what word you want to use, rearranged, I guess, that your preferences can become stunningly abnormal. And the odd thing about all of that stuff is, you know, if you get enough people together that are engaging in that particular activity, it's like a support group. You know, they all say, oh, well, he's doing it, and I'm doing it, and the other guy over there is doing it. And so we all, you know, we can all support one another, because if you get enough of us doing it, then it's okay. If only one guy does it, then he's a weirdo. But, you know, if you have a couple hundred thousand people doing it, oh, okay, well, now, you know, we should have, this group's going to have rights. You know, that'll be the next thing. You know, how about let's take it a step further, Don? Why don't we allow marriages across the species? You know, one of these guys really gets involved, he might want to marry that sheep or that pig, you know? I mean, why not? Then we'll go a step further. Imagine the field day the lawyers could have. How do you resolve the estate? You know, does the pig get the house? You know.
Well,
I mean, it's like,
you know,
where do you want to go with this?
Imagine it going into the plant kingdom. You have your choice between fern and Venus flytrap. Halloween is the night to discuss this topic, I'll tell you.
I don't think there's any, I really don't believe that there's any level to which a human being cannot descend if he chooses to do so. You know, World War II and other conflicts that we've had on this planet give ample proof to the fact that there's no such thing as how low you can go. I mean, they probably try to outdo each other, you know, whenever the opportunities arise. It's very interesting that nobody looks at the other end of the spectrum and says, you know, to what heights could the human spirit rise to given the proper support? Now, you know, the thing that irks me the most is we don't see the forest for the trees when we talk about these subjects, because we're immersed in a society which has essentially been engineered to produce particular set of results. And there's no question about that. I mean, you can trace it all the way back to the design of the way cities are laid out, the way municipal laws are written, the way the police force works, the way the food chain is set up, and on and on and on. I mean, let's face it. We are born into it, so we accept it as being normal, but it isn't. And it's all geared to produce a particular result. Now, just imagine if it was geared to produce the ultimate human being instead of, you know, the debased, unnatural, pathetic human beings that we have now. I mean, you'd have an Einstein, a Tesla, a Chopin, you know, they'd be coming out of the woodwork. Nobody knows what wonderful gifts and to what heights humanity could rise if the same efforts were put into escalating the soul as is put into driving it down. I mean, trillions and trillions, untold trillions of dollars have been spent on setting up the machinery that grinds human souls into the absolute lowest level possible. And it's still being perfected. I mean, it goes on as we speak.
Yeah.
You know, the TV show you were just talking about is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I wrestled with whether or not I should bring this up, and then I thought to myself, well, they've put it out there. And so let's discuss it, and you know, it's better to be armed and prepared, you know, with the topic than now there's probably going to be a lot of people looking for that show. I never heard of it before. I've never seen it before. And it happened to be one or two channels away from one of the news channels that I was looking at. So, I was pretty shocked. And this is part of the plan is to shock you and to get you to accept it at a subconscious level that this somehow is normal. Even though it's the act, that's why I started out. You were probably wondering, why the heck did he ask me that question? That's the strangest question he's ever asked me in the year and a half or 2 years that you've been on this show. So I never asked you a question like that. And yet that was an experience that I just had this evening. On mainstream television, mind you, they prefer to talk about that than they do the reality of these clowns running for the highest office in the land. It's a depravity of the human species, and definitely of this country, and that trash can just hit the airwaves and even find sponsorship is beyond me. But I guess we should be ready for anything at this point. And you brought up a good point too, Jim, and that's the issue of us raising our consciousness. Imagine, and that's not intended, of course. They don't intend to afford us any opportunity to raise our consciousness. An education is nothing but indoctrination into the system of compliance and brainwashing and autonomy. So we've handled that aspect. This issue of... Go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
I was going to say, there's not too many taboos left. You know, I mean, I would be very surprised if, you have a show sometime, you know, that you come across, Julia Child, prepares human feast. You know, why not? I mean, cannibalism has been around for a long time. How come they're not pushing that yet? You know, I mean, it makes you wonder where you can go with this, you know, if you really want to. But as I said previously, the fact that we can reach these incredible negative peaks is no longer a surprise. I mean, I still remember when I was pretty young seeing a documentary on some of the German concentration camps and how they were basically caught with their pants down when Patton arrived, with his troops and actually caught them, trying to get rid of all these incredible number of corpses. And they had photographs of the oven doors open and half burned bodies and, mass graves with tens of thousands of human remains. I mean, they weren't even skeletons yet, but they looked like they were. They were so emaciated.
Mm-hmm.
When you start to see that and you realize that it was handled as an industry. I mean, it was done with the same precision as you would organize a watch factory, and nobody was concerned. I mean, they were just doing their thing. I don't think it's the act itself that's so offensive as the attitude of, ho-hum, another day at the works. Today we're producing pelvic ashtrays and human lampshades and maybe some gloves made of human beings, But it's no big deal. We do it all the time. I mean, to me, that's much more of an impact than the act itself is the way people react to it.
Mm-hmm. And they're, many of the movie networks have focused on the fear laden and the sadistic themes found in all of these scary movies. Now, a movie is what it is. I mean, you can be entertained. It can stretch your imagination somewhat, but these movies have a tendency, witnessing death, witnessing sickness, witnessing mind control, witnessing all the different acts or the different forms of fear that are presented to you in every shape, size, form, color, and aroma, as you can imagine. What would be the purpose of them showing these movies all week long, other than to just build up that frequency of fear, building up to the big day, which has for them significant meaning, and for everybody else, it seems like a harmless event just to have fun. Yet, this is ingrained into the subconscious of the kids. The kids that are big enough to put on a costume and hold a bag or a plastic pumpkin to come up and knock on your door for a handout of a sweet. There's nothing wrong with giving the kids candy, but why do they have to dress up for the event? Why do they have to mirror these demonic forces? And people don't really give it a second thought. I'm not trying to sound like a prude, a spiritual prude, if you know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean. I'm not taking it that way. Halloween is is what it is, and it's become a part of the culture. Actually, it's quite different than it was when I was a kid already. You know, now it's a day of the year that's practically owned by the candy industry. You know, if you, it's amazing, even here in Oklahoma, if you go into, a grocery store that normally has, fruits and vegetables and, other worthwhile, foodstuffs laid out, you know, where you see it as soon as you come in the door. Once you hit Halloween week, you don't see a carrot or an onion anywhere. All you see is literally thousands of bags of candy of every description imaginable. It's amazing how commercialized everything has become, and the whole world, or at least our country, you can almost mark time just by looking at what appears in the stores and when. I mean, in August, they were already starting to sell Christmas ornaments, for God's sake. You know, it's just amazing how everything is set up. And we are so gullible that we just kind of blindly go along with it. I can still remember when I was a kid how surprised I was when my dad mentioned one day that laws had been passed in New Jersey to allow stores to be open on Sunday. You know, it was like a shock. Because, you know, we were told, oh, nothing's available on Sunday except the newspaper stores in the morning, you know, for the sake of selling the Sunday New York Times, for instance. But grocery stores, you know, drug stores, all kinds of businesses are all shut down on Sunday because it's the Lord's Day. And all of a sudden, they passed laws that said, well, you know, people want to shop on Sundays. And so that's their time off, and there's nothing wrong with having the stores open. They can go if they choose, or they don't have to go if they don't want to. But in those days, simply because of the impact that I felt, it was a surprise. Now, anything goes. You know,
I can remember. Yeah, I can remember when the gas stations were closed too. And back in those days, they were called service stations because they would wash your windows and they would change your oil, and they'd change your tires, or they'd even work on your engine. They'd repair your automobile from one end to the other. And it was the same with the drug stores. The drug stores were closed as well.
Right.
But it became a priority to have those open because people had to have their medication on Sunday too. They had to be able to get a hold of the medication. No one thought that you could handle that on a Friday or a Saturday.
Yeah, God forbid you would think ahead and buy an extra bottle of aspirin on Saturday afternoon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that apparently Americans are not conscious of history. They really aren't. Not even, especially not their own history. If we really and truly understood what our forefathers went through to set this country up the way it was originally set up, before some of these incredible monsters got their hands on it and switched it all around for their own benefit. If we really understood their intentions and what they were trying to avoid and why, this nation would never be what it is now. It would still be, you know, a very heavenly place to exist. And possibly still be, you know, a major world leader. But because we're not aware of the lessons that history has to teach, we are compelled to go through the cycle again and again and again. Now, I dare say that whenever we recover from whatever nightmare awaits us over the horizon, the next generation will be, you know, very much informed as to the errors of our ways. But how long will that last? You know, it's almost like it's a cycle in itself, mm-hmm. if you look at it.
You know, it's sad because none of this really has to happen. It's like you said, what would happen if they spent all the effort and all the money that they spend on bringing the frequency down to its lowest common denominator? What would happen if they did the reverse or the opposite and sought higher consciousness or just gave us free rein to seek higher consciousness? In an intelligent manner, I'm saying, you know, it has to be done in secret, or it's suppressed because the intent obviously is to drag us down. The ultimate goal is world domination and complete slavery of the general populace. And while you were talking, I was getting this image of how, because you were describing some of these older movies, you know, the movies with Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi were really spooky just because they were in black and white. You know, it gave them sort of this ancient quality, if you know what I mean.
I do.
You had to use your imagination. And you saw blood and on a black and white TV screen, blood is a dark gray, you know. So they had to remake all these movies and they had to come out with all of these variations of the movie just to make sure that they covered the whole spectrum of fear and imagination, that they could get to every aspect of some of this is out of necessity, I think, that you become numb to the level of, the depravity, I guess, of the world. You become numb to that, and they have to keep that fear going, they have to bring it down a few more notches in frequency, or octaves. So they have to redo these movies and incorporate the new techniques that they've learned. It might be hidden in the music or in the special effects of the movie or just subliminal messages that are embedded into the video and the audio portions of the film itself.
Well, the thing that's so amazing about it is if you read the works of Wilhelm Reich, he discusses what it is that is actually happening in the human condition in our society. And he laid it out there in the publication of numerous volumes of his work, which is the reason why his books were burned and he was jailed and murdered. God forbid people start thinking about this stuff. You know, but his major contribution, among other things, was the explanation of armoring. And how the senses become dulled as the armoring condition becomes enhanced. And so every endeavor has to be pursued at higher and higher octaves of excitation to achieve the normal result. So like, you know, in the 1700s, if you saw a woman's ankle, you'd be fit to be tied, but now a completely naked woman doesn't do the trick anymore. Now you have to put stockings and garters on the neighborhood cow. You know, it's the same thing. You know, it's this. It's the result of constantly interfering with the original levels of sensitivity that human beings are born with. And, you know, it's amazing the way it starts. I was flabbergasted. When I had my son, when my son was born, the doctor asked me, you know, just prior to my wife going into labor, do you want your son circumcised? And I said, absolutely not. And he goes, well, what do you mean? He says, they don't feel a thing. I said, well, is that right? I said, why do they scream their heads off? Oh, no, the nerves aren't even developed yet. You know, I mean, if you look at that from the Reichian point of view, I mean, the guy is ignoring all of his medical training. An infant is born with a complete set of functional nerves, and his brain has already developed to the point where he's completely aware of everything that happens to him, even in the birth canal. So now you're going to cut off part of his privates and throw a little alcohol on it and tell me he doesn't feel it? What the doctor is really saying is he doesn't feel it.
Yeah,
and he's actually been desensitized to the point where he's convinced himself that it's a harmless act simply because not only was it probably done to him, but he's snipped hundreds of them. You know, and this is the kind of thing that that we do. It's actually a survival mechanism, because if you remained sensitive to what you were doing, you couldn't do it.
Yes, and it's another line item on the total bill for the hospital.
Well, that's, yeah, of course.
It's the same as an extended warranty in an electronics store. And these days, those things actually come into play the way things are made. But, you know, in the old days when they were pointless. It was just another profit margin. But, you know, I'm getting your point, obviously, and so is everyone in the listening audience.
Well, the thing of it is, these are unpleasant things to think about. It's funny, because they're not unpleasant necessarily when you think about somebody else going through it, but they're unpleasant when you think about you going through it. And so you have to really start looking inward and say, what's been done to me already? Where do I really stand? You know, what could I have been? But people don't want to do that. I mean, the last thing that they really want to do is stand in front of a mirror naked and see what's really there. Nobody wants to do that. And that's because secretly we already know that we have been changed and shortchanged. We have been, brought down X number of notches. People know this at some level. They don't know how to undo it. They don't know how to address it. And, you know, so it just becomes something that you don't talk about. But the fact of the matter is, when you don't talk about something, it doesn't go away.
Yeah, you mentioned Wilhelm Reich's work. Now, I've read a lot of his scientific stuff, and I've read some of his descriptions of the processes that go on. Do you think, and I think this, we could do a show on this definitely. You know, we have the law of attraction. You focus on the dark and you add energy to it. In this context, we're addressing it to acknowledge that it's there, but so that we can choose, and the listening audience can choose to go in the opposite direction. We don't have to accept these things as normal, because they're not normal. They're not in the natural processes, let's say that. The Creator did not create the universe to operate in that fashion. These are man's own devices and perversions that violate universal law, that violate God's laws. So we're discussing it in that context. But you think Reich, or did he, ever address the issue that when you lower a person's frequency in the manner that we've been discussing in all of these topics, when you lower the frequency, are we actually emanating door energy or the negative orgone energy as living beings?
Well, I don't remember enough about the door aspect to answer that question, you know, with integrity. But I can tell you this much. Reich wrote a book called The Murder of Christ. And it's a very fascinating book because what it does is it cuts to the chase when it comes to all of his psychoanalysis and character analysis and energy measurements and all the complexities that you have to understand to really appreciate his work. I mean, a lot of people have neither the patience nor the interest to delve into it that deeply, and he was informed of this. So he came up with a message that was written to explain what it is that he's talking about when he refers to human armoring, the emotional plague, and all of these various terms that he uses. And he did it by using the story of Christ as an example. And if you read this little book, and it's only about 60 pages or 50 pages, I forget, but it's not a very big book, you'll really be stunned. Because it's put in there in such concise English that you can't help but understand what it is that he's talking about.
You recall the title of it, Jim?
Yeah, it's called The Murder of Christ.
Oh, that's the book. Okay. I thought that was basically the topic. Okay.
Well, it's both. But okay. The reason that it's interesting is because he delves into the mechanism behind why our saviors are always destroyed. Anybody that comes forth with anything, it doesn't matter if it's Christ's teachings or Buddha's teachings or anything that could serve to elevate humanity to this higher level that we were talking about, at first there's a great deal of fervor and excitement about it. And then ultimately, the messenger is destroyed. And he delves into why that is so. And basically, what it comes back to is this concept that I lightly touched on previously, where I was talking about the fact that nobody wants to look at themselves naked in the mirror. Naturally, I wasn't referring to physical nakedness, although in some cases I'm sure that's true. But rather the nakedness of seeing your true self.
Yeah, or seeing yourself in the light of truth, where nothing is hidden.
Right, and that's something that's very difficult for people to do. But the horror of it is, and I can encapsulate this in just a couple of sentences, the real tragedy of the human condition lies in the fact that we will accept a very horrific form of life and allow it to be a standard simply because of the fact that we are familiar with the burden that it represents. But if somebody comes along and shows you that there's a better way, if the path to that better life is such that it puts the individual through more torment or more uncomfortableness than what he's already experiencing, he will fight to remain in his present condition because it represents less pain. And apparently one of the most painful things that we can encounter is looking inward and really understanding what has been done to us. because yes. it unleashes a whole spectrum of unpleasantness that starts, you know, as early as birth and continues through your entire existence. Most people are not willing to take that trip. And so they prefer to say, well, what I'm experiencing now is nothing, you know, is nothing good, but I'm familiar with it and I've learned to cope with it. But I'm not willing to trade that for something better if it means that I have to really understand my true level of misery. And so if that's brought to your attention strongly enough to where you begin to resist it, then it becomes easier to slaughter the messenger than to accept the message. And if you really contemplate that, it's exceptionally profound, and it is the mechanism behind all human misery.
Well, some 40 years ago, we'll say, roughly 40 years ago, maybe 39 or 38 years ago, but I could safely say 40 years ago when I began a serious study of metaphysics so that I could deal with the experiences that I was having and come to understand them without fear, but true understanding, I would constantly arrive at the topic of superconsciousness. Remember that term? Superconsciousness.
Oh, yeah.
We don't hear that term anymore. It's a feat if you can just use the word consciousness. You know what I mean?
You don't hear God consciousness either, and that's the ultimate super consciousness.
Yes, exactly. And there are states of being that you reach in that process. And there was nirvana, was this state of bliss of knowing things and being able to sense it in as a human being. And there was a state beyond the third dimension, way, way beyond the third dimension, called samadhi. And that is a super consciousness where you just, it's complete realization. And as long as you're alive in a physical body, it's very difficult to sustain that state of consciousness. And you wouldn't be able to function in this world if you stayed in that state. So it's a state to strive toward at the end of one's life. And it would be one commensurate with being in heaven, let's say. I noticed while you were talking there, while you were making, you know, that last statement, that the word superconsciousness or what it represents is not even talked about. It's as though if we're able to just escape this 3D reality for a moment into whatever's on the way here, and many have said that it's, even I have said that it's, there's a preponderance of evidence that we're moving to a higher vibration and into another dimension. Whether we're going to be able to get that vibration up high enough to actually move into the fifth dimension, which is another spiritual dimension, it's the next step upward, remains to be seen. But we have been dumbed down as a society to the extent to where you wonder if we're even going to ever keep considering consciousness as a goal. Maybe just waking up, the act of you know, leaving a somnambulistic state is going to be the goal everybody has. Because it's like everyone is sleepwalking. People are alive and moving about, but they're asleep. They're in a trance, and we have all these illusions. The illusions are really the reality. You know, I come back to this topic of Halloween, and the masquerade, the pretending we're someone other than who we are, and yet we don't really know who we are. You get my point.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, I get your point.
Well, we're out of time, but maybe we should do a show on that topic of superconsciousness. Maybe we should be striving, you know, and aiming higher than we are.
Well, I've had some interesting experiences in that direction when I was younger. And like you, I've also done a lot of exploring in that field. So I think between the two of us, we could certainly bang it around. I'm happy to do that if you want to pursue it.
Now, yeah, you will. That will be on November 7th, and we will have a new president, or we will have a dictator.
Well,
and Lord knows what's going to transpire in the next few days.
Yeah, well, you know, it doesn't pay to beat a dead horse, but, you know, whatever is going to happen, we have to remember that we've allowed it.
Mm-hmm. And I use that, in closing, I use that example of the one person, though that person likely was just playing a role, and the intent all along was to do what happened anyway, and that was to just remove recognition of God from our educational system. It seemed like it was somewhere around the same time that they were able to get God out of the courthouses too. And
well, yeah, and they took the Ten Commandments down off of what was it, municipal buildings or something that they used to always be up there. They kind of made a clean sweep of it. And didn't they also take In God We Trust off the dollar?
Yeah, I suppose they did. You know, I haven't even paid attention. I try not to give any conscious recognition or promotion to what the symbols that they use, you know.
Yeah, well, I think that went through. I'm not sure. But the irony of it is that there's no resistance. You know, and that's the point. They've reached this level now where pretty much whatever they want to do just gets done. It's pathetic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, let's talk about next week. Let's just give our audience a recap or a discussion on superconsciousness. Let's talk about that, because it's really a fascinating area of not just metaphysics, but even science. And I'm sure,
sure.
We'll probably be talking about Tesla in that discussion as well.
I don't see why not. I mean, he's actually a pretty good example of one form of higher consciousness. But, you know, so is every other genius. And that brings up, we should close on this note. That brings up a very interesting point. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but there aren't any more geniuses making an appearance. And that's almost in any field. And the reason for that is exactly what we're talking about now. Because the level of consciousness has been driven down to the point where, you know, very few people can rise above the muck of everyday life to see the true light. And so it doesn't matter if you're a mathematician, a physicist, a musician. I mean, where are the Beethovens? Where are the Chopins? Where are all of those guys? You know, if you even listen to the music today, if you can call it music.
That's what I was going to say.
There's just no comparison. And so, you know, that right there is a very interesting thing to discuss, and we could touch on that next week also. The geniuses that have come to us over the centuries are essentially those people that move society forward. They make a contribution that nudges humanity in a positive direction. Now, there should be warning lights blinking at this point because nobody's doing that anymore. Where are all the geniuses? Something's wrong. And humanity isn't progressing. As a matter of fact, it's sliding down the incline towards the abyss. So, be forewarned, folks. Things are amiss.
Well, Jim, I thank you again for your wisdom. And, you know, this is a dark subject on a dark day, the celebration of Halloween. And we shouldn't take it so seriously. I mean, it's a dark subject, but we did talk about where we could be and where we're headed. And ultimately, it's a choice that we make. And I think it would be helpful for us to make the best choice that we can make. Forget about this concept of the lesser of two evils. Whatever happened to the best of the best? We're forced to accept what we consider one step up above the worst. It's right there. The language we use, even in this election, shows where our consciousness is. Well, I'm going to vote for so-and-so because he or she is the lesser of two evils. Why don't we have good people running? We should think about that during the week and see what happens.
Good idea, Don.
Okay. Well, Jim, I want to wish you a great weekend. I look forward to having you on the show next week, as usual. And to our listening audience, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Jim Murray. Jim will be back next Friday, and we'll be talking about superconsciousness. It's been agreed upon. And in the meantime, we'd like to thank Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible and for running the sound tonight as well. It's been great, Don. And most of all, we'd like to thank the listening audience for tuning in. In the meantime, have a wonderful night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.